Then on, we always refueled at night. Soon, one sailor came up with the idea of enlivening night refueling by projecting music videos on the ship's rear bulkhead. That, in turn, inspired a laser light show. As we approached the fuel tanker, we would douse all our lights, blare the Olympic theme song, signifying we were the champions, and begin our laser show, followed by the music videos. All this entranced the tanker crews, who had the best seats in the house. After a while, those crews practically fought for the privilege of refueling Benfold. Once the music videos were a hot ticket, we decided to add a live concert. Lieutenant Casey Marshall was a talented singer and impersonator. We brought out the karaoke machine and set it up on deck. 6 nights before Christmas 1997, we were ordered to refuel at midnight from the oiler Seattle, while the Nimitz refueled from its other side. As we steamed alongside drinking fuel, we entertained the other two ships with our flashing lights and blasting stereo. Casey Marshall sang for about 60 minutes doing inspired renditions of Elvis Presley. Marshall's version of Blue Christmas was really touching, as good as that song gets. Over on the Nimitz Bridge, a veteran navigator, sad to be away for Christmas, wiped away tears. That show cemented Benfold's image throughout the fleet. We were the offbeat ship that wasn't afraid to loosen up, make the best of what had to be done, and share fun with everyone. Giving our people the freedom to act a little crazy seemed to confirm that we really cared about them. It boosted their pride in serving aboard a happening ship that others admired and envied. The entertainment paid huge dividends for everyone. After leaving Australia, we were scheduled to refuel in Pago Pago, capital of American Samoa, on our way back to San Diego. We had all sorts of plans for that visit, highlighted by a beachside luau for which we had bought Australian beer and pigs to roast. The time is always right for a party. But no sooner had we pulled into Pago Pago than I was told to refuel, leaving Gary and Harry W. Hill behind, and depart immediately for Seal Beach, California, to offload our Tomahawk missiles. Tomahawks were in such short supply in the Persian Gulf that ours were going to be flown straight back there as soon as we released them. That was the end of our luau. We handed all our beer and pigs over to Harry W. Hill's crew, and they had our party. The ironic thing was that the senior leaders on Hill would never have dreamed up the idea of a luau in a million years. Crossing the Pacific on the way to Seal Beach, my executive officer suggested we have a kite-flying contest. It wasn't the same as a pig roast, but we were used to making do on Benfold. The XO directed each division to create a kite from whatever materials could be found on the ship. The best flyer would win. As we bypassed Hawaii, we ran into a dead calm. You could not float a kite, much less fly one. We zigzagged all over the ocean looking for a breath of wind. Finally, I revved up all four engines to generate enough wind to get our kites aloft. Other Navy ships in the area spotted our peculiar maneuvers and shook their heads in bemusement. But we had our kite flying contest, Benfold style. All this shows what you can accomplish when you throw formality to the winds and free your people to have a life on your time, which soon becomes the time of their lives. None of this required big money, only imagination and goodwill. On USS Benfold, the secret of good work was good play. Chapter 13. Life after Benfold. My tour was over. It was time for me to hand over Benfold to its new captain. A few weeks before the date, my Commodore called and asked what time I wanted him to come aboard as guest speaker. "Sorry," I said, "you aren't invited. This is just between me, my relief, my crew, and my ship. No one else is coming." In fact, instead of changing command in port and forcing the crew to do a lot of needless preparation, I had decided to turn over the ship at sea. The traditional change of command in port procedure is another dinosaur that needs extinction. Let me tell you about mine. The Commodore was pretty much used to me by now, and he came right back. "What do you want me to do with your medal?" "Would you mind putting it in the mail, sir?" On the Sunday night before we embarked, I had 310 live lobsters overnighted from Maine. For 3 days, we watched the lobsters in their tank on the mess decks. Most of my crew had never eaten a lobster or even seen one, so we gave lessons on how to get at the meat and eat it. Red Lobster gave us 310 bibs and claw crackers, and on Wednesday night, we had what I called my last supper, surf and turf. Thursday morning, we got up early and trained for 4 hours, because training was our job. Then at 10:45, we assembled on the flight deck in our coveralls. No fresh uniforms, just coveralls. And I gave the shortest change of command speech in military history. It was 5 words long. You know how I feel. Then I saluted my relief and my crew. The new improved Benfold was now theirs. As I departed, I thought about how far we had all come in 2 years. Once divided and troubled, the ship I left to my successor was all a captain could wish for, the gem of the ocean. I was hugely proud of these sailors who had become such a tight, accomplished, effective team, and I was unabashedly proud of myself. I had come far as both a leader and a person. I will never forget the excitement of commanding Benfold, of watching it improve every single day. I can't imagine a more rewarding job, and I would have done it for no pay. If I never match it again, I will still be the luckiest man alive to have had such an experience. People often ask why I didn't stay in the Navy. The answer is, I could have stayed. Benfold was such a success that I got the best evaluations of my life. The path was clear. I could have gone on to make admiral. The problem was the Navy's business is going to sea. In my first 18 years in the Navy, I spent 3 full years sailing around the Persian Gulf. All told, I had acquired more sea time than any of my contemporaries from the Naval Academy. To stay on and go for admiral would have required 3 more 6-month deployments, probably in a 3-year time span. Sea duty was rewarding, but it also took a personal toll. In the end, I decided that as much as I loved the Navy, the people who worked for me, and my colleagues, it was time for me to move on. Now, I want to share my experience and my journey to help others become better leaders. The day before I was relieved, my successor took me aside and said he almost felt intimidated. Benfold was unlike anything in his experience. He did not want to be known as the one on whose watch Benfold had declined. He asked me what he should do. He had been raised by some real pit bulls since he joined the Navy, guys who truly believed in saluting those above and sweating those below. And here he was being thrown into a strange new situation where strict Navy tradition had been turned upside down. What should he do? Where should he begin? I summarized the Benfold playbook, my recipe for running this phenomenal crew and ship. I tried not to sound like Moses, but my commandments were no less heartfelt. They were simply the chapter headings in this audiobook. Lead by example. Listen aggressively. Communicate purpose and meaning. Create a climate of trust. Look for results, not salutes. Take calculated risks. Go beyond standard procedure. Build up your people. Generate unity. And improve your people's quality of life. It took him a while to get all that, but in the end he did. A week after I left, he got his first real glimpse of what the ship was about. Benfold participated in a battle group exercise, a computer simulation, the first ever done entirely in port. Based in San Diego, the exercise revolved around the carrier Constellation, with 2 cruisers manning air defense and several destroyers, including Benfold, hunting enemy submarines. It was the Navy's first attempt to show that quality training could be done with computers in port at far less cost than it takes to send ships to sea. So this show was being eagerly watched at the highest levels in the Pentagon. If the exercise worked, simulated naval battles could save billions in the future. And to make the experiment credible, the exercise simulated even tougher conditions than the crews would encounter in most actual battles. Benfold and the cruisers had essentially the same equipment, but the cruisers each had crews of about 440 compared with Benfold's 310, mainly because they carried helicopters and needed additional specialists to run the carrier group's air defense. Given their special responsibility, the cruiser crews were considered senior to Benfolds and were much more experienced in air defense operations. Benfold was supposed to defend only itself and to provide limited air defense to the rest of the battle group. And it had neither the ability nor the specialist to handle the entire group's air defense. But Benfold was the little ship that could. The two cruisers proved unready to fight the computer war and were forced to drop out of the exercise, one after the other. As disaster loomed, the battlegroup commander desperately ordered Benfold to take over as the air defense commander made a last-ditch effort to save the exercise. Benfold stepped up to the plate and performed flawlessly. It was a grand slam. Benfold had demonstrated an ability it wasn't even supposed to have. It was an enormous victory for the crew and truly iced their reputation. The admiral of the carrier battlegroup was astonished. I heard through third parties that he questioned his staff, unable to figure out how the cruisers could not even participate in the exercises, while Benfold, the little guy, not only participated but led the whole game. 6 months after I left, Benfold got the highest grade in the history of the Pacific Fleet on the Combat Systems Readiness Review. A year after I left, the ship was renominated for the Spokane Trophy but came in second. That was a political decision. The admiral who made it had previously commanded the ship that won, and he gave them the prize. Of course, I thought the Benfold was more deserving. What kept Benfold going? My successor became a great leader. He was so highly valued that he was ranked number one commanding officer in his squadron. Benfold's retention rate was still triple the Navy's average, and other good things continued. In due course, the deputy commander-in-chief of the Atlantic Fleet chose him as executive assistant and pulled him off Benfold well ahead of his schedule. Moreover, he received the Legion of Merit Award, which is typically reserved for senior captains and admirals. He is now a two-star admiral. I myself had gotten the Lesser Meritorious Service Medal, and at first I was insanely jealous, but then I started to think, good for him. Here's a guy who demonstrated that he could change, that he could become a great leader, and good for the Navy to recognize his kind of achievement. Hopefully he will hang around to earn his stars and cause positive change in the ranks of admirals. Furthermore, I was pleased that my crew helped facilitate his transformation. The aftermath of my departure found Benfold sailing full steam ahead for at least the first year, and I am not shy about taking some of the credit. I believe that a leader's final evaluation should not be written until 6 months or a year after he or she leaves the organization. The true measure of how well you did on your watch is the legacy you hand your successors. And don't wish them ill so you can look good by contrast. Think bigger. Their success is actually your reward for leaving your command as shipshape as possible. As I write this, all of my officers and chief petty officers have transferred from ships and have gone on to other more demanding duties. Most of the crew has transferred as well. We all feel satisfaction in a job well done, but the greatest satisfaction transcends personal achievement. It comes from helping others reach their potential. That's probably what keeps teachers going. It definitely kept me going during my tour on Benfold. People ask how I got along with the other commanding officers. I have to be honest, less well than I should have. If one ship in a 10-ship group is doing conspicuously well, it's hard to imagine the other nine feeling good about it. Yet, I never stopped to consider those feelings, which of course included my own competitiveness. That was a mistake on my part. I certainly made life uncomfortable for the other nine commanding officers in my battle group. Their sailors would complain that Benfold was doing this or that. So why couldn't they? I was proud of our accomplishments, and to me it was logical for the other ships to simply adopt what we were doing. After all, top performance was what everyone was supposedly trying to achieve. That was one area where I failed to put myself in other people's shoes and see things their way. You might say I was arrogantly naive. In hindsight, I could have been much more supportive of my colleagues. For example, by telling them in advance what we were doing, so they could join us voluntarily rather than having to be ordered to join us later. Being compared unfavorably to Benfold, time after time, must have caused the wrong kind of competition. In my eyes, I was merely competing with myself to have the best ship possible. I never cared what the competition was doing. But in retrospect, it's obvious that they cared what we were doing, and they didn't like it one bit. I wish I had seen that at the time. If you decide to go the Benfold route in your own organization, be warned. By doing new and innovative things, you may create jealousy and animosity. Try to be sensitive to that. On the other hand, don't pull your punches just to avoid hurting your colleagues' feelings. Getting an entire group to excel is worth any number of offended peers. Maybe it is best simply to accept the fact that excellence upsets some people. It always has and always will. Live with it. My approach to leadership on a Navy ship began as an experiment, born of necessity. But I have since found that it is far from unique. In all sorts of thriving business, the managerial role has changed from order giver to people developer, from authoritarian boss to talent cultivator. Nowadays, the most effective managers work hard at showing people how to find their own solutions and then get out of their way. Given my responsibility for the very lives of my sailors, I could never go quite that far. But this audiobook confirms how surprisingly far I was able to push Navy leadership in that direction. The reason was simple. It works. I hope that my experience will enhance your own career, and that my improvised techniques will inspire you to invent even better ones. But let's not limit these hopes to our respective careers. When It's Your Ship was first published, the United States and its allies declared war on international terrorists, those secret predators, both global and invisible, whose cruelties cannot be allowed to prevail. If anything is certain about this historic conflict, it is that it can't be won by the command and control culture that long sapped the creativity of too many American business and military organizations. In this war, ponderous armies and corporations, stalled by hubris and complacency, will be no more effective than Britain's vaunted redcoats were in the American Revolution. Victory will go, as it did then, to the forces with the greatest horizontal leadership, the ones imbued with small unit daring and initiative. That kind of self-starting leadership lies deep in the American grain, a legacy from the old rigors of frontier strife. Though seemingly leached out of the culture by large organizations, the upsurge of individuals risking their lives for others was the most awesome aspect of the World Trade Center catastrophe. To me, it reflected the vast reservoir of selflessness in the American character that leaders at every level must learn to tap for the common good. My own experience aboard Benfold suggests the potential of that spirit once leaders learn how to release it. I therefore offer this audiobook not only as your own career builder, but as a guide to showing people how to join in leading themselves for a purpose larger than themselves. That's the real Benfold story, the leadership lesson I hope you can soon apply to whatever organization you serve, civilian or military, beginning tomorrow. Finally, let's all stipulate the winning leader's first principle. Optimism rules, and the corollary, opportunities never cease. The bottom line, it's your ship. Make it the best. Epilogue. Out of uniform. In our time, organizations often become too complex for their leaders to run effectively. Some beset leaders try to wriggle out of reality by ignoring chronic problems. Others pit their subordinates against one another in so-called competition that winds up subverting any common purpose. The price of dysfunctional leadership is, of course, a dysfunctional organization. During my Navy career, I found my own purpose in trying to create something better. Leadership that truly earns its keep by taking full responsibility for solving killer problems. Leadership is not a paycheck. Leadership is a calling. You have to want to lead with all the caring and energy of Ernest Shackleton conquering Antarctica or Moses parting the Red Sea. And you have to be accountable. No blame game is acceptable. The buck stops at the tip of your nose. This audiobook describes the leadership shortcomings that came about as a result of our resistance to change and improve in the Navy. During my own leadership transformation, I learned to fill it with methods that transformed my own complex organization, USS Benfold. Those methods lived on beyond my captaincy because they worked and benefited every leader who used them. After I left Benfold in 1999, for example, I took the liberty of emailing the 3-star admiral who was responsible for the readiness of more than 100 ships and facilities in the Pacific Fleet. I wanted to share what I had learned about reconnecting officers and sailors and confronting other neglected areas as well. I urged the admiral to hold commanding officers personally responsible for the retention and disciplinary rates of their crews. Thank heaven for open-minded admirals. This one immediately focused his strong mind and will on ships with abnormally high turnovers. In no time, commanding officers got the message. Boost your retention rate or forget promotion. It worked. Retention rates increased. Unplanned discharges plummeted. It was also contagious. In 2001, reenlistments throughout the Navy rose by 20%. There was a sharp decrease in disciplinary problems in workers' compensation cases, and a dramatic boost in new enlistments. The lesson is inescapable. Once an issue becomes important to senior management, it becomes important down the chain of command. The results can be astonishing. Newly loyal workers, better products, higher sales, and healthy profits. All because leaders do what they are paid to do. Lead. In a nutshell, leaders are supposed to solve awful problems and inspire wonderful work. Ego trippers need not apply. In my post-Benfold life, I have been enormously pleased by the U.S. military's improved leadership. All four branches have increasingly rejected the inefficiency of inter-service rivalry that duplicates weapons and squanders taxpayer dollars. Since the events of September 11, 2001, strong leadership has demanded inter-service cooperation, thus multiplying force effectiveness with great results. In business, I have encountered many companies with the kind of bad habits and poor leadership that troubled Benfold when I first went aboard. Too many company departments appear blind to what they could accomplish together. Bereft of good leadership, they are trapped in needless bickering, politics, and posturing, with predictable damage to the bottom line. And yet, unity of purpose is quite achievable, even against heavy odds, and sometimes because of them. We created unity on Benfold. The U.S. military did it in Afghanistan. I am convinced that businesses everywhere can do the same. After all, it's our ship.
This has been a Hachette Audio production of It's Your Ship, Management Techniques from the Best Damn Ship in the Navy. Written and read by Captain D. Michael Abrashoff, former commander, USS Benfold. Produced by John Clem. Directed by Bob Walter. Recorded by Jack Garrett. Post-production by Listen Up Audiobooks. It's Your Ship is also available in print and as an ebook from Business Plus, a division of Hachette Book Group. Text copyright 2002-2012 by Captain D. Michael Abrashoff. Audio production copyright and published 2012 by Hachette Audio, all rights reserved. In accordance with the U.S. Copyright Act of 1976, the duplicating, uploading, and electronic sharing of any part of this audiobook without the permission of the publisher is unlawful piracy and theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like to use material from the audiobook, other than for review purposes, prior written permission must be obtained by contacting the publisher at permissions@hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.